Recording first started. You may proceed.
We just lost David. He'll be back, I think.
And Chuck is on the call as well, Adam.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. I'm sure David will dial back into Alan, but he's not here currently.
I'm sorry, Cheryl, I missed that.
I said I'm assuming David will be dialed either out to or he's dialing back in. He's not in here currently. He was here. He just dropped.
Understand. All right. Sorry, I missed it. Did we do a roll call? Or
no, but I can do one.
Okay, yes,
noting
please.
That.
Please.
Is there anybody just on the audio bridge and not in the Adobe room? And we know David Conrad will be joining shortly. He's back in. So over to you, Alan.
Okay, thank you very much. We have a document that was initially reviewed, an earlier version reviewed by Bernie Bart and David Conrad, has been modified and reorganized somewhat, and was sent out about 2 hours ago, and a revised version factoring in comments David sent to the earlier version, but I haven't seen yet, was sent out, I guess, somewhere around an hour ago. And that's the version that's on Adobe Connect right now. We have received a number of comments from Milton, and we'll try to factor those in as we go along. The timing right now is such that we are supposed to have something ready for the CWG by tomorrow, and my intent is to get it out by late today. So we don't have a lot of options in terms of how many iterations we do of this. I've tried to arrange the document in two sections. One is recommendations that we believe must be acted on, incorporated into the proposal that would be submitted on the transition, and then identifying a number of areas that we believe should be looked at some point, not necessarily before transition and perhaps not necessarily at all. Those are things that will have to be decided. I see David in the chat is saying he can't hear anything. Is David dialed in on his own, or was he dialed out?
Dialed in by himself. He was in the Adobe room, but he's not. He's coming back in again.
He is in the Adobe room right now, or at least he's showing.
Yeah, I just let him in again.
Okay. But he says he can't hear anything.
No, but that was just before he got in again.
Ah.
Having done a lot of these calls via my mobile, if he doesn't hear now, you probably need to dial out to him. Don't ask me what the vagaries of that all is, but sometimes dialing out to the mobile seems to be better.
Now he can hear, but he can't talk.
Okay. Well, we can't have it all.
I'm going to let Brenda deal with that in the background, and we'll keep on going. Hopefully we will be able to solve that before he needs to talk. All right. Milton made an overall comment saying this overall thing is far too long. I have absolutely no problem with that. Recall during the first call, we said we better be very precise to make sure that everyone knows what we're talking about, and I took pains to try to do that. We are required, I believe, and Bernie or Bart can confirm, we are supposed to be submitting two versions. One is a one-page condensed version, and one is whatever full document we choose. Is that correct, and is that something I'm doing, or is that a staff function once we finalize what we're submitting?
Well, the summary, it's always best if it's done by the group, but the idea is that there's a short form of recommendations as compact as they can be and whatever size document to support that as the group needs.
Okay. Going forward, we're going to have to decide if what is in our second section is included in the short form or not, or perhaps just a reference to it. All right. The document is structured identifying the issues, first of all, the issues related to the NTIA going away. Routine NTIA authorization going away. I think I've used the word routine somewhere in this. I did that with a little bit of trepidation in that it's essentially the things that the NTIA authorizes through the system, as opposed to major changes. So it does include redelegations and such, which are not routine, but are part of the regular process. So if anyone thinks they need to change that word, just speak up. The first issue is sorry. The changes will be required to the function to the software made, the software that currently allows NTIA to authorize the changes, and I don't know to what extent, I'm presuming, but I don't know for sure, Chuck, you may be able to help, that VeriSign has no choice at this point but to wait. They cannot say, I'll implement the changes without authorization.
That is correct, Al.
Okay. So someone right now, either the software needs to be changed or someone needs to act as the NTIA in order to be able to publish root zones on a regular basis. So I think that's all the 1A is saying. Milton said we don't need that last sentence, but indeed I think it is necessary because we want to point out on the short term the software does not necessarily have to be written. It may well be written well in time for the transition, but we're simply pointing out it's not on the critical path. 1B.
Alan, Chuck has his hand up.
Oh, sorry, Chuck. Go ahead.
Thanks. Now, I sent some edits and highlighted some things in a document that I sent just before this started because I'm way behind with everything else going on. But why do we say in the very short term in A?
Well, because I'm assuming that the software which I think it's the software that VeriSign is running, but it may be something related to what NTIA is doing also. As you just said, you're essentially prohibited from publishing changes without the authorization. Now, either that software has to be replaced and switched on the day the transition happens, or, as David suggested, and I confirmed with Elise, that in the interim, IANA could sign on as effectively impersonating NTIA and authorize the changes that they are submitting.
And Alan, this is Chuck. So my point is they could also take that over in the long term.
Well, yes, but that's a rather crude way of doing it on the long term.
Oh, you're suggesting that. Okay, so I don't think that IANA can take that over without NTIA doing something. So I guess I'm not getting what you're suggesting here.
Is David in a position to talk yet?
Can you hear me?
I can.
Lovely.
I think David was saying was NTIA would give IANA the password, and that could be handled that way. But David, say it for yourself.
Yeah, so as an interim measure, it's entirely feasible that IANA staff log into the NTIA UI and approve changes. This would mean that there would be no need for any code changes in the existing system. It is a bit of a hokey approach, but it'll work as a near-term thing.
Oh,
well,
okay, this is Chuck again. So now, see, I didn't pick up that's what you're talking about here in A, so I just think, and we don't need to fix the wording here, but I just think we need to be a little more explicit that we're talking about an if needed, an interim solution until the software can be upgraded could be this, you know, and
right.
say it. I didn't get that at all out of A. That's why I wondered why you were saying in the very short term. So, again,
no.
I don't suggest we fix that on the fly here, but I suggest that it is more explicit.
I will do that, noted. The world I come from, you make as few changes in exact parallel as possible. So if nothing else, it is prudent not to put two different software systems in place in the same day and then try to figure out where the failure comes from. So if nothing else, it would be nice to phase them in over a day or two, even if the code was already done. But that may be my anal way of approaching things. Chuck, is that a new hand?
Oh, no, I'll have one on B, but I'll put it down for now.
Okay. All right. B says, currently the cooperative agreement, there is a cooperative agreement between NTIA and VeriSign. They have said they're going to replace that in some way, somehow. We don't know the details. Once the details are known, we will then react to it. We will probably need some level of agreement between IANA and VeriSign, but that may be precluded by the form of whatever the new cooperative agreement is or something. So we can't really specify what it is. Lastly, there is a potential that NTIA will not do a transition at exactly the same time, and therefore the cooperative agreement stays in force, at which point I suspect there is some wording in the cooperative agreement which will have to change, saying that VeriSign no longer has to wait for NTIA to authorize changes. I'm guessing. I haven't actually gone back to refer to the words in the cooperative agreement. And Chuck, it's yours.
Thanks. In the third sentence there, I'm going to suggest some edits. They are in the red line that I sent around, but they're simple enough, I think, to go over. And I don't think they're terribly significant, but because we don't know what NTIA is going to do, and tying in with your last sentence in this, I suggest that in that third sentence we make these changes. So the exact form of the ladder transition is not currently known, nor whether anything will replace instead of what, okay, nor whether anything will replace the current cooperative agreement.
May I suggest what, if anything?
Well, that I don't care. That's the same,
yeah, okay.
Same thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I did this very quickly. So.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
However, there, and I suggest instead of will likely, there may be a requirement to have a formal agreement. It may very well happen that way, but again, not knowing what NTIA is going to do, we don't know.
That's correct. I mean, clearly, if and I understand not everyone wants
to change will likely to may.
Yeah, no, I fully support that, Chuck.
Okay.
You know, although it's not what some people would like to see, if NTIA says ICANN, you're now in charge of the cooperative agreement, and you issue one to VeriSign, then clearly we don't need a separate parallel agreement. So we really can't speak to how it's going to play out
right.
At this point. So I think your changes are perfect.
Okay, and that's all I had there.
And
Chuck, can you put them in the?
That's not going to happen. I wasn't predicting it was going to happen. No.
Chuck, can you put them in the chat so I can copy them in?
Okay. Sure.
That's easier than I can open up the document, but
well, yeah, Bart, I'm not worried. I'll when I merge all of them together, I'll look at his copies. So, but if you can put them in the chat, that's even better. But
I just got to get to the right document here.
Okay. All right. C is something that David suggested. Do we want to specify as a recommendation that we look at whether other checks, balances, verifications are needed in light of the elimination? Now, that means we have to do it in the next week or two or three. Or do we simply want to leave it as something that could be done as we go forward?
This is David. Sorry, I can't raise my hand.
Go ahead, David.
My suggestion was actually just to one item that there shouldn't be a centralization of control that seemed to have consensus within the design team. HSB moved up to recommendation, but I actually asked this question. I don't have a strong opinion.
Okay, you're jumping the gun a little bit. Right now, it was the checks balances that, do we want to add the kind of verification we are talking to make sure that what NTIA or VeriSign publishes is the same as what IANA sent or that kind of thing. My gut feeling is there's no real evidence that we need additional changes. Going down that path to decide we do need some should involve a more detailed risk analysis and cost-benefit analysis than we're likely to put into it, and we should leave that as future work as opposed to design team F work.
Right, and I guess the question here would be whether or not we want to make that as a recommendation that future work is needed in this area or to leave it as an outstanding issue. I'm not sure what the distinction is.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
This is Chuck Allen.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because it's right along what David's saying, what I actually suggested later, I changed the wording later on in number 6 to actually make that a recommendation rather than the way you did it. But just I'm bringing it in now because it's, I think, directly related to what David's saying. So I definitely think it should be a recommendation. Whether we put it there or have it in number 6, I don't know that I care too much, but I think it should be a recommendation.
Okay. That I think is different from what we're saying here. The number 6 is the caution that we should not go to a single entity. We don't want a concentration of power.
But that is a checks. The reason we want that is because of for checks and balances.
Well, yes. Okay. But whether it's a single entity or multiple entities, there may be additional checks and balances one can incorporate into the process.
Okay.
So C, I think, is a separate issue from that.
Right. I think I personally believe that it would be useful to make it as a recommendation that this be a topic of exploration in the future.
Okay. So the recommendation is that this kind of analysis be done, not that something be...
Exactly.
Okay, that's fine. I'm happy with that. Milton, to answer your question, a lot of what you were saying, I believe, and I just was skimming it as we were starting the call, was to make it more concise. At the last call, there was some concern that shorthand was being used and we weren't being clear on what we meant. So this version is indeed very verbose. My understanding is we are supposed to submit two versions, one well under a page and one perhaps longer. And certainly the one-page one will be much more concise. I think the full one will probably be somewhere in between what you're talking about and the very concise version. I hope that addresses it. I don't really have any specific comments because I didn't absorb them well enough to address the specific ones. If you want to highlight anything that you really want us to discuss while you're still on the phone, please let us know. All right. The second recommendation is pointing out that the NTIA plays a large role, and in fact, after a long talk with Elise yesterday, it's clear now it's a larger role than I understood in virtually any change that goes on in the process, in the processes associated with the maintenance of the root zone, the management of the root zone, rather. And it was highlighted in a comment that comes up later in the report, in this document, on the publication of redelegations, that is, an alert saying a redelegation has been requested or is being discussed. And that was something that was put into the 2012 proposal to NTIA, that IANA was suggesting it be done, and it's something that 3 years later is still being discussed. So NTIA, my understanding is they get into a fair amount of the details, and the question is, how does this get replaced? I'll stop there. There's a comment in the chat from Kim. Is that, I haven't read it, is that something we need to bring into this point or not? Okay, no, he says. I open the floor to essentially point number two. Are there any other comments? It goes on for several paragraphs in the document. Yes, Chuck.
Yeah, I want to respond to Milton's suggestion. I just looked at it now for making it shorter. I wonder if Milton's suggestions for abbreviated text could be used in the short form, and then we use the more detailed text in the annex.
Yeah, I think we're going in that direction.
Okay,
and
good. Yeah, sorry.
I thought I said something like that.
You probably did.
Obviously,
but
not clearly enough.
And trying to participate at the same time.
Yeah. No. The certainly the short form has to be well under a page. So there's no question it's going to have to be abbreviated. Any comments on the overall gist, however? Now, the question is, are we going to make, and it's highlighted in the second paragraph, are we going to make a specific suggestion at this time as to who is it that's doing this? You know, is it the CSC? Is it something else? Do we assign it to Chuck as king? Or are we simply going to say that the CWG has to come to closure, but it's not, but the DTF is not going to do it right now?
Alan, this is Chuck.
Chuck, go ahead.
We need to be really careful, as you know, I think, about suggesting that the CSC do it.
No, that was a little bit tongue-in-cheek.
Okay.
As was Chuck the King.
I got that one.
Any other comments?
So what about the go-no-go decision? Are you not there yet?
I'm losing track of where we are at this point, to be honest.
You're in two, right?
I think...
Yes, we're in two.
Yeah, we're on the section of go-no-go. Yeah, that's exactly where we are. That's where the highlighted... The part that's highlighted in yellow. So the question is, are we going to make a recommendation as to who is it that now has the new authority with the absence of NTIA, or are we simply going to say the CWG must discuss this, but we're not taking it as a DTF responsibility? Remember, we're supposed to close down in the next week or two. No thoughts?
This is David. I think because of the sensitivities associated with what various entities, proposed entities are doing, I don't think, at least I don't have a good enough idea of, what the roles are going to be assigned. I think, or what would be appropriate for whom. So I think it would probably be worthwhile to raise this as a recommendation, say that... There is an issue here that...
Oh, dear.
Hello?
Yeah,
am I still
here?
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, but you're here.
And it's the Adobe thing, man. It's really impressing me. I think it would be appropriate to make a recommendation that the CWG... explore this and identify a party who will perform at least some of the oversight, or at least understand the issues involved with the oversight, and identify, if necessary, a party that will perform that role. I don't care who it is, and you know, it could actually be ICANN as the function operator, but you know, there needs to be some acknowledgement that there is a role that NTIA performs in the context of oversight of architectural changes, and that needs to be addressed somehow.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I don't think we're going to get anything done in the next few days on this. And there has been a moderate amount of discussion in the last couple of days on the CWG on exactly what groups do we have and who does what. And as you know, people have tried to put things into the CSC, and you know, they perhaps don't fit with the absence of the MRT and that becoming a periodic function. There may be a gap in who does what in the current proposal. And until we have a firmer knowledge of that, I'm not sure we can identify whether there is a suitable entity or we have to invent a new one. So I think that's probably a wise change to punt it essentially to the CWG in general, but not something that we can do in the very short term. David, I have a question for you, though. How many, again, this is out of date, but you're the one we have on the phone right now, or Kim, if you're still on the phone, how often are these go, no-go decisions made? It's clear that there are a lot more than just, you know, DNSSEC and IPv6 addresses for root servers, that the day-to-day things are being enhanced on a regular basis, and there are go, no-go decisions being made on a regular basis. But I don't have a sense for, is this something that happens, you know, daily, weekly, monthly?
This
you
was
add
David.
Go ahead.
And you know, Ken, if he's still on, can probably answer better. But there's sort of different classes of activities, right? One of the things that exists within the current IANA functions contract is that essentially ICANN cannot discuss anything having to do with the IANA functions contract without essentially prior written approval by NTIA. So anytime there's any sort of discussion or any sort of change, that has to be approved by NTIA, obviously has an impact on the day-to-day operations. I don't believe, and that's putting it mildly, that a continuation of that practice would be warranted regardless of who fills that role in the future post-NTIA. There are the separate category are structural changes to the existing root management system, things like DNSSEC, things like key rollover, things like IPv6, in which the infrastructure itself is there's a proposal to change the infrastructure. Those changes are quite rare. The last major one was deployment of DNSSEC. That was 5 years ago. The current one on the docket is key rollover. That'll probably be another year, year and a half, maybe 2 years in the future. But those require a higher level of oversight than NTIA is able to provide themselves, and that's why they go out to folks like NIST or DHS or other entities. So there are, you know, I think it's important. Yeah, I don't know what you discussed with Elise yesterday, but my suspicion is it was in the context of all the ways in which NTIA sort of inserts itself into the day-to-day operations of the IANA functions operator. Most of those, in my view, at least, are not really operational in the sense of impacting the root zone itself or the root who is database. They're more in the, sort of the presentation of the IANA functions operator and the relationships with their route manager and partners, and you know, the how those how the activities of the application operator are impacting the community in relation to the functions contract. That was clear.
Okay, thank you. I sense from what you're saying that yes, there are certainly different classes of these things. Just the example I raised of the NTIA of IANA not having the prerogative right now to publish the existence of redelegation discussions, redelegation, the fact that a certain one is under investigation, says that currently they are exercising a detailed level of control, not on the on the overall root architecture, but simply on the operational details of what IANA does. So the question that will ultimately be asked is, does anyone need to do that, or can we trust IANA to do it properly with appropriate consultation, or do we need someone else signing off on it? Kim, are you in a position to speak? I see your hand is up. Chuck, did you want to speak first?
Mine's okay. Not related to this. I have to jump off now and go to a policy and implementation working group chair's call. If that ends early, which it does sometimes, it's only a 30-minute call, I will come back in.
Thank you, Chuck.
I will certainly review what comes out of this and provide my feedback later today.
Yeah, I've got several more hours of calls today. I'm not quite sure when I'm going to get this revision done, but I will get it done as soon as that's physically possible.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Kim, you're on.
Thanks. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Right. Just to expand upon what David said, I think that you could probably categorize the kinds of things we go to NTIA for authorization into some different categories. There's sort of the structural changes to how regional management is conducted, such as implementing an automation system. We went to NTA with a proposal for that. We got their approval, and then we implemented that in 2010, and implementing root DNSSEC and so on. On the day-to-day, we actually go to them quite regularly. In the current environment, we need to get permission from them to post any kind of reports on our website. On a monthly basis, they need to authorize before we're allowed to publish our performance reports on our website. We need to go to them to get approval for the kinds of metrics that we report publicly. So it's a relatively detailed arrangement where they're involved at a fairly specific level about what updates IANA is permitted to do. If we want to publish a new document on our website, we would send it to them for prior authorization. For example, I think a few weeks ago, we updated the document on our website that describes how our public audits are conducted. We sent that to NTA prior to publication. So that's just a sense of the current relationship. I think just echoing off what David said, I think that moving forward, you would want to look at the sort of where are the lines around what requires community review and what are the elements that IANA has considered appropriate to be able to make the judgments on and then be accountable to the community after the fact for doing sort of these day-to-day postings and updates.
Okay, thank you. A couple of questions come to mind very quickly. On the authorization of changes, it has been said that essentially they have not rejected a change in people's current memory, and therefore although the existence of the check of the authorization being there might have changed people's behavior, the authorization itself has not changed the outcome. How often do you go to them for approval of publishing a new report or changing the format of something or something in that level of detail that they say no or that they tell you you have to modify it beforehand, before you can do it. In other words, to what extent is this a rubber stamp, and to what extent is they are really acting in a formal capacity?
It's hard to sort of answer that numerically. I would say that, you know, probably somewhere between 5 and 10 years ago, we were trying to greatly expand the amount of documentation available on the IANA website pertaining to the root zone management function and other functions. And at that time, we were not approved to publish that kind of documentation. That's changed under the current IANA contract, the one that's been enforced for the last couple of years. We finally, in the language of that new contract, there was a framework under which we could publish that kind of documentation. And so we've taken a number of steps towards increasing the amount of documentation. I mean, without going to specifics about what those discussions were, from time to time, there's, you know, it's varied between, you know, it's no problem, please publish, to minor editorial suggestions, to some lines of documentation we've not been authorized to publish. You know, but I can't give you a numerical answer as to how often it's happened.
No, I wasn't asking for one. All right, so you're saying that they do take their job diligently, and their answers vary from yes to suggesting minor changes to perhaps requiring minor changes to saying no. So it is a real function that is being exercised right now, and therefore it's going to have to be replaced, perhaps replaced with nothing, but it can't just be ignored. And it's happening often enough that this can't be a discussion that we spend 9 months 9 months having post transition. It's something, it's part of your day to day life that we do have to think about it ahead of transition. Is that a reasonable summary?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a topic that needs to be considered. And, you know, I think it comes back to setting the threshold for what are the kinds of changes to the operational environment of which the community expects there to be some kind of third-party approval process. You know, and presumably there's a line there, and below that line is what's considered ordinary day-to-day updates to the environment, and above that line is things that are, you know, material or considered important, that kind of review is necessary.
Okay, thank you. Milton asked the question, do you know what the criteria was that NTIA uses to decide what could be published and what not? Is it a security issue, something else? And your answer may be, you know, but you can't tell us. But can you add any insight into this?
I can't really speak for them. You know, they've exercised their authority as the contract manager to advise us. Sometimes we cannot proceed with certain things. I couldn't speak to what their rationale is in a general sense.
Okay.
Right, and this is David. And speaking from a historical context, because I obviously can't speak about the current contract, there were a number of sensitivities that were raised about ICANN presenting. NTIA was, in past history, was quite concerned about how the IANA functions contract was represented. So there were times when I was actually called up on the phone and yelled at because I had, you know, said the U.S. government was doing something or going to do something, and I was informed quite directly that I was not a spokesperson for the U.S. government, particularly in the context of the IANA functions contract, those sorts of things. And I think what appears to have happened was that was basically encoded into the IANA functions contract to minimize the probability that that would ever occur in the future.
Okay. Milton has said, and I support it 100%, but I'm not quite sure how we do it. We would want to know what the rationale was for their decisions in the current sense, because it might provide us some guidance. What paths do we have? I think I'm asking this to staff. Do we have to try to get that guidance from them? or do we just have to divine what we think it was? Anybody?
Kim here. I mean, it's not something I have a good answer to. I mean, you might want to pursue it with MTA, but I would also suggest that, you know, it's really a question about what does the community want. I mean, if the community is taking over oversight, what does the community believe is appropriate? And I'm not sure that, you know, beyond knowing that there is a role for the oversight of the INF functions operator to approve certain changes, I think the community should decide what they want those to be and set up a mechanism for it. I'm not sure that it's valuable digging into the past to know precisely the circumstances of individual requests that have happened in the past.
I guess I half agree with you. On the other hand, if there are issues that we are simply oblivious to but are important, somehow we have to get in the loop. Now, you know, if they're just sensitivities of the U.S. government, it's not as much concern. But there may be real issues that we're simply not aware of. So, at least I'm not aware of.
I mean, if I may just very briefly say that I think, you know, I've come to realize I've been doing this role for about 10 years now. You know, every party has their own sensitivities, and, you know, definitely having different perspectives on issue helps. You know, I can't speak to the validity of certain sensitivities. I think that whatever the process is moving forward is having the model right that, you know, the community has input where sensitivities may occur. I'm not aware of any sort of, you know, specific whole line of sensitivity that is pertinent to this discussion that you wouldn't otherwise be aware of, other than obviously I think governments have a different perspective to ICANN. ICANN has a different perspective to Verifine, and PLD operators, et cetera, all have their own unique perspectives.
Yep. I guess I agree with that. We have David, you have your hand up, so why don't you speak first?
Right. So, my impression is that one of the concerns that had occurred in ancient history was that by IANA staff or ICANN staff asserting, you know, information into discussions relating to the INF functions contract, that it could have an impact on policy. In the latest version of the INF functions contract, there was an explicit exclusion of INF staff from being involved in policy-related discussions. So I suspect that, and I don't know for sure, but I suspect that the more substantive aspects of this particular issue have been addressed, right? That, you know, in the post-NTIA future, what it appears to be the case is that the community wants to ensure that there is a separation of IANA staff away from any of the policy-related decisions. And that seems to, you know, that corresponds with what has gone in the past as a result of, you know, the change in the INF functions contract. So that's just a continuation. The other stuff about, at least the things that occurred a long time ago, about, you know, sensitivity associated with representation of the U.S. government position, that obviously will not, that's not relevant in the post-NBA future. So my suspicion or my hope, maybe, is that the focus should be on the structural things that have direct operational impact, as opposed to the presentation of things all that stuff that INA staff currently has to undertake to get clearance to, you know, discuss, you know, particular approaches of implementation of policy with the community. All of that stuff can simply sort of fade away in the dark recesses of history.
Okay. Okay, thank you. One more question. To what extent do you believe that a lot of these issues can simply be handled internally or go out for public comment? Are there likely to be things that are so sensitive that they need to be discussed outside of IANA, but they should not be discussed publicly? And I'm being vague because I don't really have a scenario in mind. I'm just trying to phrase a concern. David or Kim, whoever.
Speaking first. Oh, go ahead, Kim.
I was just going to say, I can't think of scenarios that can't be spoken to in the abstract. I mean, there's definitely specific to unique, you know, customers or unique situations. And I think, you know, the CSC design team is wrestling with those kinds of questions. But I think I'm not aware of issues that can't be discussed openly that in a generic, general sense.
Yeah, and presumably if you have intelligent senior management, they will cover those in whatever way they're necessary if and when they do arise. Bernie and then David. Can't hear you, Bernie.
Thank you. I just want to make certain that we're in a way. Dog's getting excited. From experience, I think we failed to get information from IANA, not through their own fault, but rather because they were prevented of getting it from NTIA, but they were checking with NTIA, as we've heard in the last few minutes. In removing those requirements, let's not forget one of the things we were looking for in the CWG is ensuring transparency and understanding from the community. If I just want to somehow capture the notion that if we take away the requirement to check for everything, which I think makes perfect sense. I think it obviously slows down things and creates overhead and the rest of it, so that doesn't make sense to my mind, and I agree with David and what Kim are saying. However, on the flip side, I think we want to be understanding that there is some sort of a formal requirement to be open so that we don't end up going the other way completely. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll give a completely unrelated analogy. As chair of ALAC, I am bound by no government contracts or ICANN guidelines as to what I talk about in public and what I don't and consult privately with people on. But there are plenty of both of those, and I'm expected to use discretion, and presumably anyone in a management position is faced with that kind of decision on a regular basis. David.
Alan and I were on ATRT2 together, and one of the things that Avery had put forth very early on in those discussions was that there should be a default towards openness and transparency. And I think in the context of particularly the IANA functions operations, the default should really be focused on openness and transparency. And I personally would very much like to minimize any confidentiality requirements that are placed upon IANA staff as a policy matter, right? So there are operational considerations on occasion where confidentiality may be required. There might be some security-related stuff that this is relevant to, but I don't think there should. I think that by policy, things should be open and transparent unless there is a justifiable and documented reason why it cannot be open and transparent. So, one of the challenges that I had long ago when dealing with doing the IANA director or general manager position was all these unusual requirements for confidentiality that didn't really make any sense in the grand scheme of things in my mind. So I had to struggle to figure out how to present things in a way that kept those requirements for confidentiality, but at the same time address the community's need to understand, you know, for example, why delays were occurring or that sort of thing. I'm hoping that in the post-NTIA world, the vast majority of that stuff can simply go away because, you know, the ANA function, everything that the ANA function does works. You know, these are all public databases, and by definition, they have to be public. So the interactions associated with those databases should, in the vast majority of cases, be open and transparent to allow the community to see exactly what's going on and why things are occurring the way they're occurring.
Thank you, David. I'll point out, and Cheryl is saying similar things in the chat, that in ATRT 2, Avery did make those comments, but before that, the chair of ATRT 2, Brian Cute, who was also the chair of ATRT 1, started off with the premise that transparency should be in the DNA of ICANN. And I think you're just saying the same thing here. But the fact that it was said in ATRT 1 and then came back in ATRT 2, and the review team in a number of cases was very dissatisfied with how ICANN handled transparency, implies it's not quite in the DNA yet. But I think we're all agreeing on where we should be as we go forward. All right. This is a very long discussion. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to summarize it and try to be concise, but I will do my best, and I'm sure someone will tell me if I get it wrong.
Chuck,
thank you, Cheryl. As we go forward, as I said, there's going to be a really tight turnaround on this, so I do appreciate quick answers. Chuck, yes, go ahead. Can't hear you, Chuck.
Sorry about that. I was on mute. Totally agree with David with regard to the fact that the root zone file is public, so is root zone who is. So, but what we're talking about is timing with regard to sharing some of this information. If we're talking about making it public after it's already public, it should be a non-issue, totally. But if we're talking about transparency before it gets the changes get implemented, that's different because you might be dealing with a public company that has some restrictions, or you might be dealing with some political issues with governments with regard to their ccTLDs. So I think we need to keep in mind when we're talking about transparency. Totally agree that if it's after it's already published, should be a non-issue. Nobody has a leg to stand on. But if it's before, I'm sure there will be instances where it is a problem.
Thank you, Chuck. Any other comments on this? Then let's go on to whatever the next section is. 3, the design team notes that IANA budgets must not only address operational costs, but also development costs and investigation, and these can be substantial. To Cheryl or Chuck, whoever can speak, to what extent was this already implicitly in DTO, or do we have to make it as an explicit recommendation?
This is Chuck. Well, DTO didn't deal with it at the level of detail that it suggested here. What DTO has recommended, though, and I think the cross-community working group has accepted, is our recommendation that as the solutions get more well-defined, that we go back and look at these kinds of things and see whether the budget has adequately covered them. And that could be even after the budget's approved in June. So depending on when the transition proposal is approved by the SOs and ACs and then ultimately by the ICG and so forth. So I think we have a general recommendation that covers that, but I don't think it would hurt to say something along the lines that this needs to be looked at as the budget process goes forward to make sure that it's covered.
Yeah, and I'll point out that this is the kind of thing that may vary highly from year to year, but it's clearly something which is going to be important that it be funded appropriately. Cheryl.
Thanks, Alan, Cheryl, and you know, for the record. I just want to come in behind Chuck. I think what would be useful, see, I'm following you again, Chuck. That's a joke for the record. If in this document the DT does say something along the lines, Alan, of in addition to or following on from the basic recommendations regarding budget and the budget transparency by DTO, DTF specifically notes that and then goes into,
okay,
IANA budgets must not. Well, even I don't really care about the must not. What I do care about is include, I'd actually ditch the first part and go include a component to allow for the investigation development, et cetera, et cetera.
Got it. Thank you.
You've got to keep building it better. Thank you.
Yep. All right. The next section, that covers all of the all the things that were formal recommendations in this version of the draft. The next section talks about things that we think might warrant community discussion as we go forward. There was a recommendation by, I think, David, that we put in the recommendation that four should be essentially mandatory, that the community must make a conscious decision whether to proceed or not proceed on the items in that are listed in four. Is there a general consensus that we want to do that? I personally don't feel very strongly about that. I think simply identifying the issues, and they'll either bounce up to be relevant or not in a post-Diana, a post-transition era, is sufficient. I'm not sure I really want to charter a risk analysis group as a mandatory task, but that's my position. How do other people feel about it? Bernie.
Thank you, sir. Let's not forget that we've got two other levels of oversight and matching. We've got the equivalent of the periodic review team, which will be doing an in-depth analysis and going through quite a lot of details. So that's an opportunity to identify and bring up these things. And secondly, according to where we are in the CSC, we would certainly have a significant conversation with IANA every year and publish some things. And again, so that would be an annual opportunity to look at these things. I'm just simply pointing out, if we don't make a hard and fast recommendation here, but simply list the things, I think that there are ample opportunities where these things can be picked up if necessary.
All right, and we can even make reference to that. You know, that the CSC and periodic reviews will have opportunities to pursue these should it become something that, you know, might be necessary or of interest. David, go ahead.
So this is where my OCD engineer hat sort of sticks out. The structure of the group management system, if it's considered critical infrastructure, and if, you know, organizations depend on it operating flawlessly, then I believe that it's necessary to look at these issues, and I would actually argue for stronger language that says, yeah, these are things that that the CWG or, you know, that at some point in the future this must be examined in detail, particularly as the transition proceeds. Because I'm afraid that if we don't and something falls through the cracks in the intervening time between, you know, the post-transition when things first start and then when things get into normal day-to-day usage, I fear that we would be held responsible in a way.
All right. That's a compelling statement. Anyone else? And I see any tick marks. Do people agree with David? And we should put a strong recommendation in that the study must be done. That doesn't mean we end up implementing anything, but that we look at the issues, look at the risk analysis, and proceed forward. I see no one commenting. That means you're leaving it to the discretion of the chair. Correct? Okay. I will take it under advisement. And we have two people who I think are agreeing to leave it to the discretion of the chair, but I'm not 100%. They may be slow on their tick marks. The discretion of the chair right now is edging towards following David's recommendation, just for the record. To what extent can we or should we increase transparency? All right. This is the question of what should be public and what should not be public. I think I sense from the earlier discussion that we may actually want a recommendation explicitly saying, to the extent possible and practical, IANA should be, transparency should be the general rule. I think I heard enough statements about people feeling strongly about that. So if I don't hear anything otherwise and I see some tick marks, I think we've added a new recommendation. I think a new recommendation needs to be added on the whole issue of transparency. Now, the question is, if we do that, is 5 still relevant, or are we just moving 5 up? All right. No, 5 is actually speaking explicitly to changes to the root zone, and that is, can we or should we be looking at whether we can make these things public prior to them actually being deployed? Chuck's comment basically said that there may still be some issues related to confidentiality. That means we should not be publishing these ahead of time. That may well be an issue, but I'm not sure that's a reason to preclude studying whether they can be made open. But I don't think we're in the position to recommend it now. David?
Yeah, so I would, you know, it's a shame that Chuck isn't on the call at this point, but I would suggest that there are phases of the root zone management process, right? So the point at which a change request, whether it's for the root zone database or for the WHOLIZ, the point at which the validation has been completed. So the IANA staff has gone through and ensured that the folks who are requesting it are authorized to do so, and the change makes technical sense, and all of the various checks that are done by IANA staff. At the point when that is completed, the only real difference between publishing that information at that point and publishing it after the root zone has been updated is essentially a 12-hour window, right? Because there's no mechanism by which a change, at least in theory, from the point that it has been validated to the point where it gets implemented, can be modified unless there's some sort of technical failure that occurs in between, like the TLD administrator changes the main server after the validation, but before it got actually implemented, that sort of thing. So you're looking at a very short window and I'll take that considered. And I would argue that what really matters is that the change has been accepted for processing, because then it's just essentially an automated process to the point where it actually gets published. You know, before the validation is complete, then I would agree that there's probably a good reason for that to be confidential information, because it could be rejected. There are various scenarios what you can imagine where that information might be sensitive in one way or another. But after the validation, then it's purely a mechanical process between that point and when it actually gets published, so I don't see any need for confidentiality at that point.
All right, but we're not at this point actually recommending we're not recommending making those available. We're simply saying that it should be studied.
And I would agree that it should be studied.
Okay. So it stays.
But Kim has his hand up, so he trumps my comments.
Yeah.
Look, I fully agree with what David said, and I just want to just add some extra input that I think this is a semi-controversial topic in the community. I don't think there's a consistent view as to what elements of requests should be public. So I agree it warrants study and I think that's appropriate. I will say that there has been a lot of feedback that in the specific case of delegation and redelegation of ccTLDs, there is a view from a number of parties that there should be an opportunity for third parties to be able to participate in that process, whereas today they might not even know such a request is pending. So that's something that I think that process will need to tease out and work out an appropriate transparency approach from the IANA to address those community concerns.
Kim, I agree, and you'll note, although it folds onto the next page with incorrect paragraph numbering, there is a discrimination between changes that are requested by the registry and those that have to do with delegation and redelegation prior to or after this thing has in fact been approved. You know, clearly with ccTLD redelegations, it is public because the board makes, the board decision is within a reasonable amount of time is a public issue that may well be published before it enters the root zone. But the discussion of the existence of a redelegation discussion, and that's something that I made reference to earlier, the RFC explicitly says the community needs to be able to get in on the discussion, and currently they may not know the discussion is happening, so that is problematic. But they're two very different situations, I believe. Number six in our document is currently updating the root zone requires the active participation of three parties. Post-transition, there will be only two, and this is where we get into that we are recommending that we should not have power concentrated. We talked about this as a recommendation. I'm not sure that it is relevant in right now, since we have no control over, as discussed earlier, what's going to happen with the cooperative agreement. But I think leaving it here as something to mention, and we don't want to lose a record of it, I think is important. David and Bart, I'm not sure what order the hands went up.
Bart was first.
Yeah, just for the conversation, what you already see in the notes was a suggestion for language by Chuck.
Okay.
So that's recorded.
All right. David, go ahead.
I was just going to say that sort of regardless of what happens with the cooperative agreement, I think making a statement regarding the principle that there should not be centralization of power is appropriate. If NTIA chooses to continue the cooperative agreement or whatever, and otherwise chooses to somehow ignore that principle, then I still think it's important that that principle be understood within the context of the CWG and the community.
Okay, so this is actually we're actually looking at a separate section, I think, and I think the next one falls into it. It's not issues regarding further study. It's principles that we believe should be adhered to. And I think 7 falls into that category as well, and perhaps even the transparency one does. And 7 it says don't do things at all and reasonably slow things down. And I suspect the transparency one is another principle that must be adhered to going forward. And Cheryl in the comment, sure, I understand what it says, but I'll let
Cheryl. That's not relevant to your last piece. It was relevant to David having audio issues earlier.
Okay. Bart, is that a new hand?
Apologies.
Okay. So everyone happy with creating a new section on principles? Seems to be the thing to do in documents these days. Not seeing it. One check mark, that makes a majority. Thank you. Anything else we need to cover? I'm not at all sure how I or with the help of staff I'm going to integrate all of this together in the time frame we have. But is there anything else anyone wants to add to advise us before we call this call to an end? Kim, yes, go ahead.
Just a quick comment on 7. I'm just reading it for the first time. I mean, I think it's conceivable that the community might come up with some kind of policy for the RIDZO management that requires further review than is done today, and it might necessitate longer processing. My initial read is I wouldn't be so absolute and perhaps phrase it in such a way that, you know, a priority is fast implementation of changes, and any changes that might delay processing or reduce the speed of processing need to be considered carefully against what they're trying to achieve. Something along those lines that I would hate for this to be a hard and fast rule that ultimately results in ICANN saying we can't do that because it will make the process slower, even though there's a community mandate to do something in particular.
No, good point, though. Any other comments? Yeah, Cheryl pointed out accuracy is important, too.
Milton had one in the chat. Concern.
Milton had one. We actually have two different interpretations of the separation of roots and manager and a principle. One talks about concentration of power, and the other about checking errors. I'm not sure I understand that. Certainly, when you know, having two entities may mean they check errors, but it may also mean they introduce errors. And Milton asks, what is the purpose of the separation? And Milton is going to answer that, I suspect. We have a number of hands. I'm not sure how many of them are old or new. Kim and then David.
Sorry, old hand.
Yeah. And Milton says he's asking, what is the purpose of separation?
So from my perspective, one of the keys to separation of the roles of the function manager, or actually more granularly, the ability to edit the zone versus the ability to sign the zone versus the ability to publish the zone, is to ensure that you actually have what's called two-person controls. If you concentrate all of the power into a single entity, then that single entity can either accidentally or maliciously change the root zone or the WHOIS database without any secondary checks to ensure that those changes are appropriate. So if you have two-person control, you greatly reduce the risk of changes that are done either in error or for nefarious purposes can actually get published. And there are approaches that, depending on how you split out the actual tasks associated with root zone management, that can be done that would ensure, that would minimize the chances that a arbitrary change could be made outside of policy, outside of the expected norms of the system.
Thank you, David. I support the concept. I'm not sure it's there today, though. Right now, as I understand
it, that is, I believe, a problem.
Okay, but having the two parties doesn't do it. Right now, as I understand it, once the a change is requested by a registry, IANA does not have the ready capability of changing the content of that. At least that's what I understand. That, you know, if the registry typed the wrong thing in requesting the change, they would have to do it again. They cannot. Someone in IANA cannot fix it. But if indeed someone in IANA could fix it, then they could also change it to be something completely different, yet something that would pass the technical validity checks. You know, it is a DNS server, but it's just the wrong. Or it is a server, but it's not the right one for that registry, and that conceivably is something that IANA could do right now, and VeriSign could not catch it.
So I
don't think the two parties fixes that kind of problem. The controls within IANA fix it.
Right. So a two-party control would ensure that if a change is proposed, that the change that actually gets implemented matches the change that is proposed. And steps could be taken, you know, if, for example, the change gets published publicly after it passes validation at the IANA function operator, that the change that ends up getting proposed to be pushed to the root server, the auditor function that we had discussed, whatever that was, could ensure that the change that they receive to be pushed out to the root servers matches the change that was made public after the validation. And to answer Milton's question in the chat, it's actually both.
Sorry, what was the question?
The question is this, what was it? So you say, where'd it go? Lost it. Oh, are we talking about avoiding mistakes or abuses of power or both?
Okay. All right, I just wouldn't want to go overboard saying two-party control fixes all of the possible sins that can happen. It catches some of them. Certainly,
the
kind of change we're talking about would catch the root zone maintainer making an arbitrary change or an accidental change due to a software glitch. It doesn't necessarily stop anything in the end-to-end process. Everything in the end-to-end process.
And what I've recommended in the past is that this be a topic for exploration by technical folks, because I actually think a properly designed two-party control system could actually address essentially all of those particular concerns.
All right. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to put all this together, but I'm going to try. And yes, Cheryl, mitigation is a good word.
Milton has his hand up, I believe.
Ah, Milton, are you going to speak? Yes, go ahead. Haven't heard you yet.
Milton, you're so faint, we can barely hear you.
I will.
No, and Milton. If you're saying, no, Milton, we can't. I will use the cat instead. Ah, the chat. Thought you had a new technology here. While Milton is typing, is there anything else anyone wants to raise? Question is, given the purpose of the separation, does it make sense for ICANN to contract with the Root Zone manager, or should the contract come from someone else? That's a really good question, and one that I don't think is within our domain to say how it's going to play out. Anyone have any thoughts on that? Is this something we should be discussing? Is it in our domain or not?
Look, I'm Cheryl here. I'm not sure whether I need to argue that it's in the domain or not, but I actually just don't, I agree with David. I don't think it matters. It should be able to be contractually constrained as robustly as it is contract via through two distinct parties or contract from ICANN. I actually don't care that much about who does the contracting. I care about what's in the contracting for that.
Except who does the contracting controls what's in the contract. David, let's try to wrap this up because we're running out of time.
David, yeah, I was just going to say that I think those sorts of explorations are something that should be done. Yeah, I think the key is to state that the exploration should be done from the design team.
Okay.
I don't think, I think there's arguments that can be made both ways, and there are a bunch of different variations that, exist in the space. I don't think we'll be able to address it in any sort of reason.
Okay, so what you're saying is the current six, which declares there must be no concentration of power, should be changed into something saying that discussion must be had.
I'd say that there must be no concentration of power, and that how best to implement that should be important.
Okay. Of course, all of that may be taken away from us by how NTIA chooses to replace the current cooperative agreement, should they actually go ahead and do that. But
yep.
Life, we can't control everything in life. Okay. Milton says he agrees with the last formulation. Bart, did we capture that correctly? Or does it need to be restated by Milton?
It's in the recording.
It's in the... I know, but I'm not going to get a chance to listen to the recording again. Okay, I trust that between Bart and Bernie, they'll make sure that was captured. And I'm going to call this call to an end. And I thank you all, and I'll try to have something out before I go to sleep tonight, whenever that is.
What is this thing called sleep, Alan? Go on.
As you well know, I don't do a lot of it, but occasionally it does help the quality of my writing.
Thanks, everyone.
Take care. Thank you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.